Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are on the most efficient way to get the show. You're in the iTunes search engine. You just enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. So I'll go ahead and get to the big news. It was just announced the other day. Not even 24 hours at the time of me recording this, but Floyd Mayweather, the biggest boxer in the world and the most financially successful boxer in the history of the sport, is going to go to Japan on New Year's Eve and fight Tenshin Nasukawa, the greatest, probably the greatest prospect in terms of overall kickboxing as far as buzz and the accomplishments that he's had early in his career, probably the greatest kickboxing Muay Thai fighter of Japan for his age. And also, of course, dabbling in MMA. He's got some MMA fights as well. But you are talking about must-see TV and Tenshin Nasukawa, a guy who, it's one thing to be successful and to have a lot of wins in kickboxing. It's another thing when your fight style brings about the imagination for what can happen in a fight. And we're talking spinning jump kicks and flip kicks and spinning back fists. This kid, not only can he beat you with the basics, you know, his 2-3, his 3-2 step back, his power shots, his work to the body, a low kick game, a body kick game. Like, not only can he beat you with the basics of kickboxing, he has the ability to stretch your imagination and leave you going home thinking, I never thought anybody could do that. He is that type of special. So I've been wondering how I was going to frame this conversation. So I first and foremost have to start with the most important factor. This is the biggest news in the history of kickboxing. Never in the history of kickboxing, and I will go to any age, any era, have we had so much attention on a guy? There are so many people that are sitting down right now and they're looking up who Tenshin Nasukawa is. And there are people in the American media who could barely name five mixed martial arts fighters, let alone one of the better kickboxers / MMA fighters in Japan, that have to sit down and look this kid up and realize just how special this guy is. With that said, it does not necessarily mean that there's going to be this leads to an epic fight. Clearly, with Mayweather, we are talking about a guy who, business first, and I remember when he brought this up, because they talked about it when Pacquiao said he'd like to do a rematch, and I remember Mayweather said that he would entertain something like that, but first he's going to fight in Japan. I remember when he said it. It was so offhanded. It happened in, like, August, you know, so it's not something that's new for him. It came up before. So, when this came about, first of all, it should be noted that there's probably about a 20-pound advantage for Mayweather, which is something that he usually doesn't fight with. He's going to be bigger than Tenshin Nasukawa, who fights a lot in the around, for people here in the West, around 125, I mean, 58 kgs around there. So for people here in this part of the world, you guys want to hear 125. You know, he fights around that kind of weight class. But this is a fight that, you know, a lot of people are bringing up Antonio Inoki versus Muhammad Ali and that kind of appeal to it. I would say that is, and that was with a professional wrestler. So this is the next closest thing to something like that. Now, is Nasukawa bigger than Inoki was back at that period of time? I would argue no at this period of time. But I do want to say something towards what kind of fight this could be. Clearly, the question is, is this going to be, the rule set's the first thing that comes up. So same thing that you were talking about with McGregor and Mayweather. People are like, is it just boxing? You know, is it just boxing? Is it something else? Are they going to do mixed rounds? Because Japan has a history of that, where one round's kickboxing, one round's boxing, one round's MMA. Are they going to play with something like that? I do not believe that's the case. The best possible outcome would for them to somehow do two rounds boxing, one round kickboxing. That would be the best possible outcome for Nasukawa. Not the best outcome for Mayweather. Mayweather would struggle in the one round of actually getting low kick. It's not a normal feeling. It is not a normal feeling. It is tough for people to get used to it. It is a you don't prepare for that in a couple months. So I'm imagining this is going to be a boxing match. A boxing match with a much smaller guy. But Nasukawa, he'll fool around and do a spinning back fist anyways, you know, even though it's illegal in boxing. He'll fool around and do it. So if it were to happen, clearly the bigger, stronger, savvier boxer is going to win that bout, would be my prediction. But if they were to somehow, some way, do one kickboxing round, just one. Shoot, they could do 1 minute of a kickboxing round. You would see the difference in the sports, because the skill level that Nasukawa brings with this, it's not normal. He could win by head kick in 20 seconds. So it's a different feel completely. Now, as for does the fight actually go forward, you are talking about a guy in Mayweather who is used to making $100 million plus. Like where he's used to making big-time paychecks, in particular in his last two outings with the McGregor fight. I won't say last two, two of his last three. And with the, you know, with the Pacquiao fight, with the and the most of McGregor fight. You can also say Canelo brought him a lot of money too, not you know, nine figures, but it brought him a lot of money. He is used to getting the biggest checks. And this is a guy who is competing once or twice a year, and he's still number one on the highest paid athletes list. He is a savvy businessman. He makes the right decisions. No matter where you rank Mayweather in terms of what he is as a boxer in the world as far as his skill level, like he wouldn't be in my top 10, for example, of all-time greatest boxers. He is the unchallenged all-time greatest business fighter, businessman in boxing by a long way. Go ahead and put him 100 slots above your number two guy. He is really, really smart with his business. He has really smart people around him, and he has a whole lot of money. So for him to take this fight with Tenshin, you know, with Tenshin Nasukawa on the Rizin brand, it's just, first of all, it makes you wonder, where's Rizin getting this money from? Now, clearly, this is going to do huge in viewership. It is going to do huge. So maybe they've got something set up with some sponsors early. Maybe they're getting calls for sponsors that we haven't gotten before. Maybe Fuji TV's like, shut up and take our money. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be on our broadcast. Like, maybe it's something along those lines. But that is the biggest gap in all of this that we're all trying to figure out. The opponent was the first thing, you know, because I wondered. I was like, if you're going to fight Japan, who are you going to fight? I remember when Mayweather said it. So now that we know who the opponent is, and we know that the opponent is someone that everybody knows who is about to be the biggest star in kickboxing, the Takuru, I would make the argument before this, was the biggest star in kickboxing in Japan. Now it's not even close. It's Tenshin Nasukawa just by this news. The fight doesn't even have to happen, and this fight has made him the most popular kickboxer in Japan. So the two questions, of course, that you ask to say, what does it take to make this fight moving forward, or to make this fight happen moving forward, is how are they going to pay fully? That's a big one. And then, of course, the other one is, as we mentioned before, what are the rule sets going to be? So those are things that have to be revealed in time. But, man, I'm telling you, when we start seeing those pictures and we start to realize this is really going to happen, it was a weird feel to it. Like, it was just... It came out of nowhere. It's not the one that anybody picked. This is far and away the biggest news in the history of kickboxing. If you want to know some other news that I could bring up along those lines, the thing with Mike Tyson never happened when he came in there and he had the moment with Bob Sapp. That never happened. So, you know, like, it was just that one standoff that they had at the pay-per-view right after Bob Sapp beat Chemo, and then they had the talk, you know, you call your kid Diamond, I'll put your lights out. Like, that was one of those rare moments that didn't lead to anything in a fight. Bob Sapp versus Tyson would have been big, but it didn't happen. The other big news was the cancellation of the K-1 World Grand Prix heavyweight, because that was the one moment when that happened, 2010. I think that was the one moment where people were like, kickboxing's dead. You know, clearly kickboxing's alive and well. And again, it just takes another star. And this gives Nasukawa the opportunity to be that star. Not only does it give him the opportunity to be that star, it gives him the opportunity to be that star at 20 years old. So we've got 8 years of somebody fighting him, and of course the possibility of him and Takuru. We've got those years to come. But this rare, you know, that news of the K-1 World Grand Prix title, a championship being canceled, that was huge news in the kickboxing world, because people thought it meant the end of the kickboxing world. The glory acquisition of the It's Showtime talent, you know, getting all the guys that they have on their roster, that was huge, because that meant that the K1, that was the number one brand in the world, they still had so many guys that were signed to or signed up to fight for the future K1 events, but they were all under its Showtime and Simon Roots. But once that was bought and Glory took over its Showtime, that meant that all the best talent then shifted over to Glory, which wasn't what they had before. Before they had the best people from Hemmer's Gym now, but Glory Gym, which were some, you know, really good fighters and good stars, but they didn't have all the talent. When that was bought, that meant that Glory had all the talent. So those are the big news that you would kind of compare them by. The first ever K1 World Grand Prix, big news. Like, that one was the heavyweight, that was a big news. The first ever Max K1 Grand Prix, that was huge. So we're talking 2000, 2001, big news with Masato and the Max. We're talking 1992, 93, big news with Arts and Hoost and Sikatek the first generation of huge heavyweight stars and what happened throughout that period of time with kickboxing. Those were big events that were big news. I would argue with today's media and just looking at how many people are talking about this on Twitter and so on, I would argue that this is far and away the biggest news in the history of kickboxing. I only hope it results in a fight, and I only hope, more than anything, that this fight that is going to result in gives me one round of kickboxing. Just one. I don't need everywhere. I just need one round of kickboxing. So we'll go ahead and go into the kickboxing action we had. I'm literally going to talk about cards from all over the place. So we'll go ahead and talk about where I was. A lot of you guys know that I work for Glory Kickboxing. I help in the talent ops department. I help with mac making. I help with signing Glory Scout or Glory Fighters in U.S. It's been a fun ride. But when I break down Glory Fight cards, I usually try to keep it about the action. So I won't talk about future narratives. Just tell you what I saw. Sitichai Sitsong Pinong defends his title against Josh Johnsy at 49-45 on two cards, 50-44 in the other. It was interesting because that 49-45 on the two cards means that the judges disregarded the knockdown that happened in the second round. It was weird. It was more of an off-balance thing where Johnsy was doing a technique, and Sitichai, from my view, it looked like more he pushed him and then threw something afterwards. And when Johnsy hit the ground, he got up right away. He goes, no, I didn't get hit. He was like, no strike hit me. It was kind of more of a push. Just a really weird motion. And they did a count. But the thing that made this fight was Josh Johnsy. I felt like because he was so aggressive, a lot of people sit there and they try to figure Sitichai out. Johnsy had his mind made up that he was going to throw his hands and he was going to look to attack the lead leg, that he was going to be aggressive. He was going to do his step knees. He went out there and he fought himself. He's going to lose. You're going to lose being yourself. You're not going to watch the fight go down. You're going to go after it. And this is a guy who fought Georgia Petrosian. You know, this is a guy who's fought the best fighters in the world and has risen to the occasion. You know, he had some losses, but then he turned right around and he had some wins, you know, and some really good wins. Wins to the effect of his victory over Baia. Big time win. You know, Stoyan Koprovsky earlier in the year. Big time win. He has a loss here and there, but he bounces back and he continues to go against high-level opposition. With the opportunity to be the best in the world, the title on the line, Josh Johnsy fought the way you want someone to fight. He left it in the ring. He really came after him. Because he did that, Sitichai, who can be conservative and play body kick and movement and boxing here and there, he was aggressive. He kept jumping 3-2. He kept lighting body kicks and low kicks. He was really, really aggressive with his counter. It just was a fun, high-level fight. It's really important for us, you know, as Glory, that people see when they sit down. Because, you know, we had Mick Maynard, a friend of mine, who is the matchmaker for the UFC. Sean Shelby was there. You know, Anthony Pettis. We had a lot of people from the UFC, T.J. Dillashaw. A lot of people from the UFC were there at this fight event. And in the way that when we go to a mixed martial arts UFC event, we want to see the highest-level guys reflected. When they came here, I wanted them to look at our champions and say, these guys truly are the best kickboxers in the world. The performance between Sitichai and Johnsy made you feel that if you were there. They really brought their A game. They really, really were successful. So really good stuff by the two of them. Sitichai, I just love his effect on the crowd. You know, like, they couldn't have known who Sitichai was before this fight event. But when he walked out, the cameras came up. People were on the feet. When he fought, like, people were, you know, they were into it. They made noise every time he landed a body kick. Like just something about his charisma. Now, it wasn't to the level of Bukau. Bukau is still the biggest international tie as far as kickboxing goes. There are better fighters than Bukau, for sure, that have fought in the international stage. And you can make the argument that skill-wise that Sitichai is better. But the complete package of appeal, the it factor, swag as the kids used to call it, that still belongs to Bukau. With that said, Sitichai really made a name for himself in this night. People were really drawn to him. He was aggressive. And then in the last round, the two played with, like, you know, jumping kicks and stuff like that in the last minute. And I think the crowd had fun with it. So, good stuff. Sitichai, still your glory champion. The rematch between Anissa Mexen and JD Menezes. I mean, and by rematch, we're talking about this is the third time that these two have fought. And JD has fought Anissa Mexen in all three of her glory fights. So, coming off a debated decision or controversial decision where JD was with forward pressure and I guess in work rate, was able to, you know, get a couple of the judges to go over Anissa Mexen's clean connects and effective damage. I would say that, you know, that first fight in Denver, I really, really thought that it would be a clear decision for Mexen. And then they came out and the judges saw it differently. They rewarded the pressure in the offense. So Mexen came into this fight so determined to prove that she was the number one fighter in the world and that there should have never been any sort of doubt in any decision or any fight with her. So the big key for me in this fight did not happen in the fight. It happened 3 days before the fight where Mexen is sitting down and she's doing her interview and she says, I'm going to knock her out and leave no doubts. Now, Mexen's a good fighter, but she's not really known for being a stoppage fighter. Like, she has the ability to stop you. She has the ability to drop you. She's, you know, she's quick, you know, fast twitch. She has real good techniques. She can turn over her punches well. She's really good with her timing. So she can find the moment for it. When she came out there from the moment, JD didn't get into her offensive flow like she did before, where the forward pressure was there. Mexen played on the bounce like she normally does. She has a bounce to her style. She plays on the outside. And when you do anything, Mexen fully believes that she can stop and find your rhythm and have success and then go right back after you. Like, she fully believes that even though she's bouncing and your feet are flat and you're moving forward, she believes that she's got better. She's a better athlete and she can figure out what your offense is going to be before you are successfully able to complete your combo. And that's what opens up a lot of her counter offense. In this fight, anytime JD tried to throw a kick, she got hit a lot. You know, like got hit with combos and sometimes not even single combos, like with the left hook. Sometimes it was 3-2. Sometimes it was a combination flurry. Really, Mexen was serious with the boxing early and really got up. You know, Menezes is trying to get herself back into the fight, but she would do a combo and a kick. And the moment she would do it, Mexen would see inside of it and hit her. After round one, where Mexen clearly scored a lot of techniques and threw a lot of offense, Mexen threw in bunches all night. The thing that people kind of got on her for in the last fight was, at minimum, at least JD was the one throwing in combos, where Mexen was playing in, you know, moments here and there, twos and threes at the highest. Here, clearly, Mexen came out and threw volume shots in round one. Round two, Menezes is in the middle of a combo. She's throwing a kick. Mexen scores something big, and I can see she's hurt. Mexen then goes on the offensive, and when she's going for the kill, she's not just throwing shots at the head. She's mixing it up to the body and coming back upstairs. She has huge offensive success in one corner. JD is retreating. She then has success in that corner. JD retreats again. She then has success in that corner. JD retreats a third or even fourth time, if my memory serves. And all the time, Mexen is walking her down and landing big shots. The ref then steps in. I know some people were saying like they didn't like the stoppage. I thought the stoppage was 100% good with me because he gave her an opportunity to fight back. And every once in a while, she'd throw something offensive. But for the most part, he gave her a chance to battle because she didn't go down and we don't have standing eight counts. He gave JD Menezes the opportunity to get herself back into the fight, but the offensive proficiency, the work rate, the clean, effective power shots from Anissa Mexen were too much, and the ref stepped in. So Mexen wins the title, you know, got on the mic, said that, you know, I just need to, basically, paraphrasing, she wanted to leave no doubt. She really sat on and committed to the power. She, you know, felt like she lost wrongly. She came out and proved, I'm of a different level in this one. Anissa Mexen is back to being your glory champion, and it'll be fun seeing what she does down the road. JD will be fine. JD's got a good fight style, so we'll use her again, and she'll be in good fights for time to come. But Anissa Mexen on this night proved that she was the number one female kickboxer in the world, and in particular in the weight class. And as I mentioned before, there were a lot of eyes, MMA media-wise, some UFC fighters and so on, a lot of Bellator fighters were in the house. A lot of eyes were on our kickboxing brand. So when you get to the top of the card, people want to see if these people are your champions, do they look like they're the best in the world at what they do? 100% yes, as far as Anissa Mexen and Sidek Chai's performance. Chris Camozzi gets a victory over Myron Dennis. Camozzi kind of came out, and man, is he huge. For a guy, I can't believe that once upon a time, this guy made, you know, 185, 186 pounds regularly in the UFC. But he looked like an absolute monster in there. Myron Dennis came around, moved to score a few shots, and then he got a head kick off. The head kick scored clean, but it was more foot than shin. And, you know, Chris Camozzi took it, you know, stuck his tongue out, like to say, you know, it didn't hurt me. It was a good shot, but it didn't hurt me. And then after that, just work rate. Stayed busy with offensive flurry, stayed busy with step knees. Dennis would have a moment here and there, but Chris Camozzi, that size, the volume, I mean, he even started to have a little bit of fun. Tongue sticking out. He threw it like a question mark kick that didn't have a lot on it, but he just kind of kept playing with it. And just the work rate and the numbers were the things that made him win all three rounds, 30-27. You know, Dennis had moments here and there, but just the onslaught of the pressure and the numbers that came from Chris Camozzi was the reason why he won this fight. Amari Boyd gets a victory over Alan Shineson, and it's an interesting thing because Shineson is trained by Nicky Hemmers, and you could hear Nicky in the corner. Alan came out after 1 minute of fighting, looked absolutely spectacular. Came out through combos, big time outside low kick, everything's going well. Amari Boyd came out kind of more trying to find his rhythm. He plays power boxing. He likes his switch kick. He'll play low kick every once in a while, but really Boyd is his boxing and his power switch kick. So after round one, even though he left the game plan, Alan Shineson started the fight so well in the beginning of the fight as far as his low kick work and his distance game. But in the second half, he just looked for power shots. And at best, he threw an inside low kick, which was scoring, you know, a lot. But he got away from the outside low kick, and Nicky was calling it from the corner over and over. After round one, you could still make the argument that Shineson won, though Boyd was coming on late. As we go into round two and three, this is something that I noticed from Boyd when I watched him fight in Chicago with Abraham. If it comes down to a round or two, if it comes down to just the very, how do I put it? If it comes down to the very end of a fight, if it comes down to I lost the first round, I've got to get two, I've got to get three, Amari Boyd is going to take those two. He's just going to take those two rounds. Like, in his mentality, he will bite down on his mouthpiece, get in front of you, throw power shots. He'll throw two down the middle to get your guard up, and then he'll just start going wide and trying to go behind your ears. And then he will play that way until he lands shots that rocks you, and then he starts to take over the round with his volume. In between that, he'll still play with the power 1-2. He'll still play with his power switch kick. He likes his switch kick. But, man, if it comes down to the round is close or I need to get this round back, Amari Boyd is going to bite down on the mouthpiece, get aggressive, and take. And I thought that that was the difference in round two, in particular in round three. And Nicky is just yelling like Alan like crazy. Get back to the low kick. Get back to the game that got you here. But he just, Alan, just when he's out there, I don't know if it's the feel. Maybe it's the sound or the noise. Maybe everything's blocked out because he's in a fight. He got away from it. And he was having so much success with it early. And it just didn't go his way. He loses a unanimous decision, 29-28 on one card. So the one guy gave him the first round, but the other gave it to Amari Boyd, who took over the second half of the first round and then got two and three with his power boxing and his switch kick. We then move on to Kevin Van Noordstrand versus Masaru Glunder. You know, aesthetically, sometimes styles don't bring about the most entertaining fights. This one had interesting narrative, I guess because of where both guys are placed. Kevin, of course, you know, he plays with that. He'll do a combo, and if there's a dead space, he'll do a spinning back fist inside of it. Masaru Glunder walks around. He plays with single shots, like a single high kick and single body kick, and like plays with that. And then his power boxing, he plays with that throughout fights to have success. But sometimes he finds himself waiting a little bit too much. Kevin Van Noordstrand won an uneventful round number one, but he did a little bit more work, and he did have a good spinning back fist that scored in one of the series. Round two saw Masaru Glunder throw power, got Kevin off balance, and when Kevin was off balance, he couldn't find Glunder. Glunder was able to throw a combination, 3-2. Right hand puts Kevin down, so Kevin takes the count and he gets back up. So now we've got, you know, one round for Kevin, a 10-8 for Glunder. So then we go into the last round, and, you know, they're battling it out. I feel like at this period of time, Kevin is, even though he's not necessarily scoring, he's definitely throwing more than Glunder. And then in the very, this is the unfortunate matter of it, they had been warned as a group about holding throughout the fight. Both of them were being warned. And really, all they had to do is just throw some knees or something when they were in those clinch moments, but they just kind of hung out and nothing really happened. With about 20 seconds left in the fight, they get into another one of those. They pull Glunder away. As soon as he pulls Glunder away, he takes a point from Glunder. That means that's a 10-8 for Kevin Van Noordstrand, and that's the fight. That point deduction determined the fight. We probably would have saw an extra round because Kevin would have won 1-3 just off of my eye, and then we had the 10-8. But once that decision was made, and again, it was not a clean, beautiful fight. It was gritty, and, you know, it was two top guys who didn't want to lose, who just, you know, while they were going into their offense, they were hitting each other. They were connecting to each other. So didn't go that way, the way they'd like, but I still thought that it was an entertaining scrap. I still thought that it had a entertaining result in terms of, man, what's next for Kevin Van Noordstrand. But aesthetically, it wasn't the most entertaining fight. But good win for Kevin, who gets, you know, is a USA guy who's getting wins over a high-level international guy. So good for him. Next fight on the card, Asa Tenpao gets a fight victory over Nico Tagares. I've been trying to use Nico for a while because he is a hard guy who will bite down in his mouthpiece and will fight right in the pocket with anybody. If you hit him, he's just known for, he's kind of our Arturo Gatti because he will, for the kickboxing fans, he reminds me of Wendell Roche. He will fight anybody in the world and will bite down in his mouthpiece and pressure them and walk them down and pressure them and walk them down. And then look for his power boxing and spots. The moment you stop, he'll just let those shots go. He came out and he was pressuring. So first they played in space. And then Asa Tenpao got the combination work going, got some low kicks scored. And then Nico realized, nope, no more space for me. I'm walking this guy down. Asa and his team, you could see they worked it so, so hard. They work the movement. They work boxing and go, finding running Nico into step knees, running Nico into, you know, tripped him with the inside triple a couple times with the inside low kick. When they got into space, he'd go combo, flurry, and kick. But for the most part, Asa had to be wise with his feet. But Nico, true to his game, was able to get Asa backed up and stopped at several periods of time. And it just made for an awesome fight. Nico was able to land some power shots. Asa was able to take those shots. And they had some really good flurries, some really good moments. Clearly, all three rounds went to Asa Tenpao. But in defeat, I thought Nico Tagares really made a name for himself. Like, if you didn't know who he was and you watched him, you'd go, I want to see this kid fight again. And I'm already thinking of some fun matches to do with Tagares. But Asa, you know, showed a little bit of it all, you know, and not only did he show the chin because Nico had scored some with the boxing, as I mentioned before, but Asa showed the diversity in his offense and not just the boxing to the head. He found the body rep. He found some really good step knees in there. He found the low kick and the high kick here and there. He's just a awesome, awesome fighter, and I'm glad that he's in the company. Really good show by both guys. Fight of the night for me personally between these two. Charles Rodriguez and Malik Watson really put on an entertaining affair while it lasted. I thought that Charles Rodriguez really showed me a lot of skill. He is consistent with his low kick work, but he is really strong for the weight class. Malik Watson-Smith was able to score with the switch kicks and some boxing in space. And Charles was able to take that and continue to walk him down. There were some really cool moments where the guys were going back and forth with you know, kick exchanges. But really, Charles showed his skill because he was able to box, able to get into his low kick game. He scored a lot of them. And then it slowed, you know, not just off the combo. He did it off the push. The push to get the weight off of your stance, that's always provides a good low kick. I teach that with my students as well. So he played hands to low kick, push to low kick, clinch to low kick. He looked for a lot of opportunities to do damage on the leg, and he went after the cab. He went after the thigh. Like, he went after a lot of spots, and I thought Rodriguez really showed a good account for himself. Malik Watson-Smith, he showed that he's got the ability, very technical kick, very fast twitch. His team had mentioned that they felt that, because he had been blinking early in the fight, and to Charles Rodriguez's credit, he stepped away every single time he saw it. He was like, hey, something's wrong with him. Gave him a second. But he was dabbing on his eye. And at first, I wonder if it came from a headbutt. And then our replay showed a headbutt. But later, Watson's team said, whether, you know, advertently or inadvertently, that, you know, they're making the argument. They wondered if maybe there was something in Rodriguez's dreads that came off. Maybe like grease or something like that maybe came off and got in his eyes, because when he was in the corner, he got up, he said he was going to fight. We were wondering if he was going to keep going. They called timeout, and then, you know, Malik said, let's go, I'm ready to go, but he was blinking, and the doctor watched him blinking, and the doctor stepped up and called it off, because he said something's wrong with the eye. Charles Rodriguez made himself even more of a fan with me, because right after it happened, he's like, no, let's go one more round. Give him one more round. He's clearly trying to fight. Give him one more round. We'll go one more round. And I was like, man, that is a fighter right there. You've got the victory. You've got the winner's purse. Everything is going in your direction. Charles Rodriguez still said, I'm a fighter. I'm here to compete. Watson's a fighter. He's here to compete. Let him come out and go one more. Really, really had a lot of respect for Charles for doing that. You know, as for, you know, what happened with the eye, man, that's where we got to let commissions do what they do. They do checks on the body. They, you know, you see the ref come over there and do that check before fights. So I got to leave that up to them. But I will say that there was good skill showed and defeat by Watson before the fight ended, and really good skill and offensive efficiency shown by Charles Rodriguez in victory. Next fight was Justin Houghton versus Vince McGinnis. The flow of the fight, you know, just Vince was, he couldn't get consistently into his game. He had a good counter right every once in a while, and he played with a low kick, but he couldn't get into his combo full like I think he would have wanted to. Justin Houghton also working to get his game a little bit more. He was missing early with a lot of his power shots, but then he'd land something big here and there. Hands were a little bit low, breathing out of the mouth, but he was still able to score the power shots that he needed to in spots, and he was able to get a 30-27. He's got a two-fight win streak, which is good for Justin. You know, it seems like him and the new team have turned things around as far as just his confidence and going out there. And again, not one of the most entertaining fights of the night, but I thought that Houghton, you know, is to get the winning streak going means a lot to him. So just have to keep working and keep building on it. Chamonix, Soar, Theron makes her glory debut as she goes against Ashley Nichols, and she wins by split decision. Really, this kind of came down to what do you like? Now, for me, in rounds 2 and 3, I thought Ashley Nichols not only scored more with step knees and her boxing, but her pressure had opened up so much opportunities for her, and Chamonix's offensive output went way down. Chamonix had a very good body kick. And the body kick, when it scored, it echoed and it made a sound and the crowd responded to it. And also, she scored it good enough to disrupt what Ashley was trying to accomplish. So Ashley tried to get into her game, a well-timed switch kick, knocks her off balance and makes her restart. Round one, I felt, was clear to Chamonix because she got the kick going when a lot of action wasn't happening. But man, I thought Ashley Nichols, just from the eye, I thought that she picked up her offensive output. She walked, Chamonix down. Round three, she was feeling it. Like, just feeling good, letting the hands go. It's that kind of like, this fight's mine, I'm better. Like, she really came out, threw aggressive with the boxing, threw with the low kick. She's working with a new team as well. I thought she showed good skill. I thought Ashley Nichols did a really good job. I thought personally that her work in 2 and 3 was going to be enough to get on the scorecards, But Chamonix did score some good power body kicks in round one and in round two. So I think that was probably the thing that was the difference. I know some of the judges had scored full rules Muay Thai before. So maybe that particular judge valued body kicks over the boxing. But I thought that all in all, Nichols did more work for me to get the victory. But Chamonix getting the victory I had no problem with it. You know, I'm not a robbery. That was not a robbery situation. Chamonix did some good stuff with the body kicks. Nate Richardson gets a first round stoppage over Justin Greskowitz. You know, Nate has got all the athleticism in the world. He's a good athlete. He can close the distance. He throws good power shots to the body and to the head. He's able to score one to Justin, scored a knockdown with a shot to the body, came up with a flurry, got a big shot over the top with one of his hooks, and then at the end of the round, closed in on Justin, threw a power flurry on the corner and put a knee right through the middle. Three knockdowns in the first round. Nate Richardson gets the victory. Just got to build on it, you know. He works with Chris Khan and Stellar Jim, and just got to keep working. Like, just keep fighting. The kid's good. He's a good athlete. We like having him in Glory. We think that he's going to be, you know, one of the guys to keep moving forward and push, you know, USA Kickboxing. He fought Victor Pinto very, very good. You know, I like Nate Richardson. I'm all about this guy. So keep working. Keep getting hard, you know. Justin Greskowitz fought everybody in the world, man. Fought for every organization. You know, unfortunately, he has not been able to produce the offensive skill that he has in other organizations. But, you know, you just keep staying with it, and you put the work back in the gym, and your next outing's got to be better than your last. But he's a hard fighter who's fought all over the world. I've liked working with him, you know, since he's been in the company, and you just got to keep pushing. Abraham Vidalis makes his Glory debut. He gets a victory over Assam Al-Kassari. Assam Al-Kassari coming off the two wins back-to-back, two stoppage wins back-to-back. He came out, and he's good size. You know, at 5'10 for the weight class, he's pretty good size. And he goes against Vidalis, who's taller than him. You know, Vidalis is about 5'11". And Abraham Vidalis came out, and it was almost like watching a Dutch kickboxer, but to the body. Hook, body kick. Jab, body kick. 1-2-3, body kick. Cross hook, body kick. He played with it a lot. He threw a low kick here and there, but mostly played with the body kick. He had hurt Assam early. Assam, you know, you kind of winced from it, backed away, tried to catch his breath. And in the middle of Assam realizing, you know, I'm taking damage, I got to battle back, there was an exchange. And in the exchange, Abraham Vidalis let the left hook go, scored. Assam went down. They did a count in the corner. Assam, you know, the corner was right by me, and he looked fine. He had responded to the ref and said, I'm good, let me go. But the ref, I guess, felt that he was looking off, or that he staggered away, and he called it. So Abraham Vidalis gets the victory. You know, the Mexican fighter moves to 12-0 with 10 stoppages. The kid is good. Vidalis is very, very good. So hopefully, you know, keeps working. I'm going to keep using him. He's one of the guys that I was able to find since I've got this job. And I was like, man, this kid's got Glory level all over him. He can fight. So he's in there competing, doing well. Shout out to Abraham Vidalis. And we all move forward. On the undercard, a couple of these fights I want to mention as well. Jonathan DiBella gets a victory over Muhammad Lamir Yin. And 30-25, he scored a couple of knockdowns in the fight. Jonathan DiBella can fight. This is my second time seeing him. I think second or third time seeing him. This is the second time back-to-back in New York. He's got a mean body kick, and he has a vicious counter right hook and just open right hook. He finds his offense. I thought Muhammad brought pressure offense to him. I thought that he was able to score in spots. I think that DiBella had more tools with his 3-2. His boxing was good, and again, he cracked with that left leg over and over and over. He's really, really small. This wasn't one of the Glory cards that was matched, because he fights around 125. So Jonathan DiBella, you know, hopefully maybe one day he stays undefeated and he goes out and fights the super kid Nasukawa, who's going to be a really big fight moving forward, especially if the news goes through, as we talked about before. But really, really good stuff there. And then Harry Germain made his pro debut in kickboxing. He gets a victory over Iskander Osmanov. Harry looked great. He looked great. Everything he threw seemed like it landed. Like, he had a nice combination of low kick game, But some people, when they throw the combinations to low kicks, they use the hands more like in blinding, like they're just kind of fast hands aren't hitting anything. And then they put the chop on the end. When Harry Jermaine threw his hands, he was scoring with everything. Just bop, bop, bop. Like in the exchange, like I'm noticing all the punches are landing on his opponent, and then the kick comes. So he did a good job. He scored a shot that goes Usman off in trouble, and he went down shortly after that. And then I believe there's two knockdowns, and they stopped it with a flurry on the feet where Harry Jermaine gets the stoppage victory. What was it? Juan Pena also had a victory on the undercard where he'd gone down in the third and the first round, and he came back in the third round and got a stoppage. Just there was some good stuff. That the prelims were great. You know, the Richardson, Rodales, DiBella, Pena, Jermaine. They had some really good stuff on the prelims. So shout out to these fighters and these athletes that made Glory a fun event. It really did. They put on a great show, and I was excited to see them. And I love the sport, so I want to see more of these athletes moving forward. So next card I'm going to take you to, we're going to Japan, which was the focal point of all the news earlier. But K1 did a tournament this past weekend. First and foremost, this tournament didn't have the buzz of some of the other tournaments. It had Hirotaka Rabe on the card as one of the longstanding, stars. Yoshihiro Kido was also on the card. But I just felt like the feel to this card wasn't as big as some of their other kickboxing cards. Maybe that's because there was no Misaki Nori, who's, of course, one of the better fighters in the world. Maybe that's because there was no Takeru, who is, the best kickboxing talent in Japan right now as far as his dominates in the weight class. So maybe that was it, but it was a good card. It just didn't have that appeal like we would have wanted to see from them. I mean, it just didn't work out. So, but we'll go ahead and go down as far as the overall buzz to it. But man, we had a good card, good card, good fights. And I'll run down some of the results here. Jinya gets a KO victory over Yuki Koge, third round. That was one of the preliminary fights. We'll keep an eye on Jinya moving forward. Tomoya Yokoyama gets a victory over Yuya. Knockout, 36 seconds, almost an MMA fight in terms of just the dominance of Tomoya. Deke Matsushita gets a victory over Fumiya. That was a knockout in the first round. So we get out the gates, we got three stoppages, and we ain't even got to the tournament, So to open up the card, the people who were walking in, if you got in on time, still a low audience at that time, but if you got in on time, you got to see some stoppages right out the gate. Then we jump into the tournament field. Daizo Sasaki defeats Sam Hill by unanimous decision, 30-27 on two cards and 30-28. Sam Hill, I'm sure he wanted to have a better outing in his first big international step up, but it's just that's how the game is. He ended up running into a guy who made it all the way to the finals, and Deza Sasaki. Deza, really good with his step knees. He's got solid boxing. Kick game's all right, but I think his boxing, his step knees are quality. We then move on to a very fun knockout as Jun Nakazawa gets a stoppage KO over Sean Clancy. Just the offensive flurry of shots. Clancy was tough, man. He wasn't trying to go anywhere. He was trying to get up. He's trying to fight back. But sometimes you just run into that bull. And Nakazawa was just going to throw offense until he got Clancy out of there. I thought they were going to call it a TKO. Because if I remember correctly, it was on the feet. Nakazawa was able to throw in bunches. And to Nakazawa's credit, he didn't just headhunt. He spent a lot of time, I'd probably say even more time, shoe shining and throwing power shots to the body and then coming upstairs. But Clancy just couldn't get a position to battle back. He just, Nakazawa scored something early, and then Sean was in trouble on survival mode for a really long time. But we'll see what happens with him moving forward. Yusumi Soda gets a victory over Mo Adurahama. Mo Adurahman is a guy who I've seen fight a lot. I've seen him fight in Glory. I fought Glory in New York. I've seen him fight in England. He just struggles with that big step-up victory. That's the only thing missing. He's gets into great fights because he's got a great fight style. But, this tournament, 65 kgs, it's right at home, right where he wants to be. He goes against Yosumi Soda, and they fought hard. It goes to a fourth round, an extra, and it's close, good back and forth. But Soda was able to get Adurahama in trouble and then get the victory. And it just makes me look at his history and they go, man, As talented as Mo is, as much as he brings the war, he just got to do a little bit more to make sure he gets his hand raised and not the other guy. Because, I mean, his step up, Kevin Van Nordstrand, who I mentioned before, who got the victory over Masaru Gonder, that's one of his step up opportunities, and he wasn't able to get it, you know. And it's just, he had some of those in England, Scotland as well. Like, there are opportunities where he went against better guys, and he just didn't get it. Soda, he's been fighting for, you know, for K1 for quite some time. He's a talented kid. He gets the victory and moves forward. Wersakrek, also known as Kyle Fairtex, he gets the victory here. Head kick KO over Tetsuya Yamada. This is an interesting fight for me because I was surprised at how close they wanted to bring this fight in. This is an early time to make this fight. Earlier than I would have ever expected as far as them putting this tournament field together. But they have the fight round one. Tetsuya is measuring. He is measuring with his paw hand. And he's like measuring, feinting, measuring, looking for an opportunity. And the whole time, first kick, and this is just the sneaky stuff that coaches kind of, you know, a nerd like me notices. First time he does it, Kyle meets his paw hand with a paw hand. Second time he does it, Kyle does not meet his paw hand. Third time he does it, or when he moves his feet to close his distance, Kyle Fairtex closes the distance with his earmuffs up, suggesting that he's ready for Tetsuya to throw some power down the middle, and he's got a strong guard to meet it. But he was hiding the head kick behind it every single time. So right before the head kick comes up, you're going to notice him first play paw jab, then put his both forearms up to kind of put the guard right in the middle of, or right in front of his face. It looks like he's blocking a straight shot, a 1-2. But what's really happening is he's hiding the high kick. Left high kick comes up, bang, KO, killer. Kyle moves on. Tetsuya, he got up, but he was just on wobbly legs and, you know, fell into the ropes, and the ref did a good job of stopping it. So we go through round one, and we've got kind of, you know, what the what K1 would want. A lot of Japanese guys moving forward. Soda, Nakazawa, and Sasaki. Those guys all move forward. One tie moving forward in that group. We're going to some super fights. Yuki Egawa gets a victory over Hoyada by extra round decision. Hasuke Kato gets a victory over Rue by KO in the first round. Very good stuff there by Kato. And then Kana, who I've mentioned before in this time, fights on, you know, Crush a lot too. She gets a victory over Josephine Knutson. I believe it's Knutson. It could be Knutson. But kind of continues the role. You know, she had the one blemish last year against Melanie Higgins from Holland. But ever since then, Kana has been on it. Like, she has been consistently fighting and having success and moving forward. And she can fight. Like, she's a talented girl who's got power in her hands. And she wants to be, she said, hey, once upon a time, there was no max division. And then Masato made one. I want to be what Masato is to men's kickboxing, and the contributions he made, which were huge because of the 70 kg weight class, really birthed off of the max. So she wants to be that for the women, and she's talented enough. She's got good skill. She's you know, learning and growing all the time. Plus, they're using her a lot. So Kana moves forward, her and her collection of overalls that she wears all the time. Deiza Sasaki then gets a victory over Jun Nazukawa, 30-27, 30-28. On most of the cards, and then a 29-28 on the other one. Two cards gave him every round, but one draw, and then the last one was 29-28. Nakazawa just didn't bring the offensive output he had against Sean Clancy, but then again, two different levels of fighter. Sasaki gets the victory. Kyle Wersarek gets the victory over Yusumi Soda in the extra round. The rhythm to this fight just never picked up. It never got to a place where you're like, someone's taking it one way or the other. When they went to the final scorecards, the cleaner offense from Kao did it. But at this point, your interest in the tournament is waning a little bit because there's not the back and forth aren't there as much. The rhythm isn't there as much. It just wasn't the kind of eye-popping night that K1 wanted to have, in particular coming under the Tenshin Nasukawa news. So, like, that makes this card almost forgettable. But you still had high-level guys getting victories and moving forward. But the flow to the fights, it would have been good if they got it on KO throughout. But KOs are coming. So we go to Yoshihiro Kido as he gets a victory over Jonathan Tahu. Jonathan Tahu is right now the most famous guy on Gift and YouTube and Facebook streams that you have no idea who he is. Jonathan Tahu has a really awesome KO victory where in a fight he does a jumping spinning hook kick, like a karate style kick right out of a movie. He scores clean in the guy's jaw. It makes a big popping noise. Sweat flies into the crowd, and the guy like does this really slow fall as he gets knocked out. It is one of the most awesome kicks you'll ever see. If you go look at my kickboxing highlights from the last couple of years, this highlight's in there. But what it didn't show was him winning a lot of rounds. Because when you win against Yoshihiro Kido, that's what it takes to beat high-level guys. You can't beat them with flash kicks all the time. You got to beat them with volume. So in my generation, there was a guy named Headhunter. I'm not lying. Headhunter. Go ahead. Go put Headhunter into your YouTube. This guy fought in Australia, and he was a name. Like, this guy could fight, and he could blow people out. The problem was, when he had to win rounds, he wasn't scoring enough consistent offense. And then eventually, people would find the big, successful KO on him. Tough guy, but he, go look at Headhunter versus Mike Zambides, for example. He plays with his power shots, but all of a sudden, Mike Zambides, who wins rounds with his power boxing, he's able to score jumping knees and head kicks and so on against a guy who's known for doing the flash. But Jonathan Tahu got to this stage in the exact same way. That KO video, and then his wins in the local market. But when he went against Yoshihiro Kido, a guy who's been doing it for a while, Kido was better. And that's what, moving forward, he's got to work on his offensive game so that he's in position to beat those better guys. Got to win rounds. Hirotaka Rabe gets a victory over Ryusei Ashizawa, KO in the third. Hirotaka Rabe, he had that weird... Basically, he goes out there. He gets a KO victory over his brother, which people didn't even think was possible. But he gets a KO victory over his brother. After he got him hurt, he was doing spinning hook kicks, and he was trying to kill Koya Robe. Gets that victory. After that victory, he went on the weirdest slide where I think he had lost 4 or 5, and he just didn't look good. And he was so great when he was young. He was winning my KO all the time, and he was amazing. But he had some struggles, ran into some losses, losing to some guys that nobody would have thought that he would have lost to. And then this victory here just shows that he's been committed, and I think he won the one before this as well. He's been committed to, improving his kickboxing game, winning rounds, and then finding his power shots later. He was able to get this KO over Ashizawa in the third. So Hirotaka Robe is going to keep fighting. He's going to keep being a one of the better, 60 kg fighters in the world. But he's got to put together the run that he had that made him one of the best fighters, that made him the champion. Unfortunately, Koya Rube has more skill to win fights and to win rounds. So if they meet again, the brothers, I got Koya in that matchup. Jordan Bikeo gets a victory over Minoru Kimura. And I heard some people saying that, on one post I saw that they said Kimura was overrated. And I saw someone that said, what's he doing? First of all, if he's going against Jordan Bikeo, he's fighting above his weight class. And Jordan, who's normally the aggressor who comes out and throws power shots and walks people down, in this particular fight, he played conservative. He let Minoru go out and throw his offense. And what Kimura didn't realize was when he was scoring those clean shots and scoring those body rips and scoring those single power shots, what he didn't realize was Jordan was trying to figure out what his power was. Once he realized that his power did not move up in weight class with him and that PK was a different animal than anybody he'd ever fought, PK would throw a power offensive series. He threw one with wide shots. He put a knee in the middle of it and then put a hook afterwards. That put Minoru down for the first time. And then another flurry where he, second round, remember, he's throwing the shots straight. And then he throws straight right hand at the belly, brings the elbows in the middle of the guard in on Kimura. And then PK throws a looping right hand instead of going down the middle that goes right around the guard, scores to the temple. Down he goes again. It was just Minoru trying to get power offense in moments, but Jordan Piquet just being way too strong, waiting those moments out, coming back with his own power offense and getting the stoppage. In the third round, he had a flurry where he scored hands, he threw a knee. The knee was borderline. It looked like it could have been groin, also looked like it could have been to the body clean. And then after, Manuro was bent over from the shot. He threw a power shot to the head with a hook. It was the fourth knockdown in the fight, and they stopped it after that. So Jordan Piquet moves on to, you know, the next opportunity. He's still the Crush champion. I wonder if I was in their office, I wonder what their thoughts of him being the champion. Like, I'm just curious, how do they view him? Do they desperately want some Japanese fighter to take the Crush title off PQ? Because he just keeps winning. Alex Rivas gets a victory over Yuta Murakoshi. That one was good for Alex because his first big kind of, you know, step-up opportunity in international stage. I've seen his name a couple times, but this is a big one. But the fight, because the card, the feel of the card had kind of lost its luster, the stoppages that I mentioned before were third-round stoppages. So at this point, as I'm going through the card, I'm not as into it, but I am going to pay attention to Alex Rivas moving forward. Good victory for him. And then the tournament ends. Kale Rasarek, as he gets a victory over Deizo Sasaki. I'd say the second round was the round where Ku got the most effective offense in. He did a flurry where he threw a knee and he put boxing afterwards. He had another flurry later in the round. But for the most part, it was such a forgettable fight because the pace never changed. It just kind of stayed dull, 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 and shot here and a shot here. And both guys are capable of more. And K1, the brand, is capable of more. It was still an all right show, you know. But I'm just saying that the exciting feel that you get and that you've gotten from the shows throughout the year, I didn't get it in this one. It just didn't happen for me. But still a lot of good stuff, a lot of good fights. We are now going to go over to Los Angeles, California. See what I'm doing to you? Went from New York, went to Japan. Now I'm going over to Los Angeles. Lion Fight 50 had their card. Regan Ursel gets a KO over Jakeem Haig. It was, what, 232? I can't remember what round it was in. But the problem, the story is Regan Ursel is one of the elite stoppage fighters in the world. So you know how there's like an all-violence team. I think I'm going to come out with something where I just talk about who, you know, MMA, they have all-violence team for guys who go out and get stoppages and so on. I want to do something like that for, you know, Kill Squad. You know, I'll give it its own name because in kickboxing, we've got guys that are just absolute murderers. And Regan Ursel is one of these guys. When he goes out there, he is not playing. He's now got a decision on his mind. He'll settle for a decision, but he came to kill you. And he was able to get a victory here over Jakeem Haig. He's a tough guy. He's so long and for the weight class. It just Regan Ursel brings it. It's hard to believe that my first time seeing him was in a controversial loss to was Cosmo Alexander in Houston. But he fought on the He fought on the liver kick. The Legacy kickboxing card in Houston, the first one. He came out there and he lost a split decision. But a lot of people thought he won the fight. And they were like, I don't know how that went that way. Since then, he's fought a Mind Fight for a lot. And he's fought in one championship. And he's just an all-around killer. I'm all about Regan Ursel. Next fight on the card, Jordan Harris gets a victory over Josh Scales. 49-45 on all three cards. Jordan Harris, guy that to pay attention to. These fights are a little bit tougher to get a hold of, but I have CBS Sports, so I got to see it on replay. But shout out to Jordan and his victory. I'll be watching him moving forward. Josh Aragon, who I'm very familiar with. I don't know what contract, if he did a single fight or a lengthy fight, because he's based out there in California, but he gets a victory over Chris Masseri. 49-46 on two cards and 50-45. Chris Masseri is fighting Glory, tough guy. Fought for the title once, you know. Put together a good year. Also fought in K1, you know. Fought good guys. Lost to Ilias Belaid, no shame there. Belaid's really tough. Josh Aragon usually fights a little bit bigger. So for this fight, I don't know what weight was that. Was it at what? Was that 70 kgs or did they do 47? Because I've seen Masseri usually fights around 47, 43. But shout out to Jess Aragon, hometown guy, getting the victory here. Travis Petrobola gets a victory over Bonthong Siathong. Split decision there, 49-46, 47-48, and 49-46. And then Anthony Rakan Workin gets a victory over Zach Ungerit, 48-46, three times. So, line fight did their thing, but most importantly, you want your champions to look good and move forward. It's Josh Aragon is signed to a long-term deal. Hopefully, we'll get to see a lot more of him. But Regan Ursal is the biggest Lion Fight star, I would say, right now. He's the truth, man. That guy has got his talent, would have him successful in any organization that he fights for in the world. So really good stuff there. We are going to keep the ball rolling, continue to bring you guys all over the world. Another card that I got to see, I won't talk about all the fights, but I'll talk about the big ones as we talk about Coliseum. They had their show and the return of Daniel Gita. Was really what this show is about. Daniel Gita came out. He's going to Porter Rock, who's the perfect guy to go against because both of them are older. And Daniel Gita almost looks like, for me, he kind of reminds me of, just in kind of appearance, he reminds me of Alexei Ignashov because he's super tall and the gut's still a little bit soft, but he's got a good kick game no matter what. And when he first started fighting, I had wondered if his right leg was injured because he threw almost no right low kicks. Instead, he threw a lot of switch kicks to the body. He threw a lot of... his lead kick would attack the outside right leg or the rear leg of Devin Porterock. Every once in a while, Porterock would throw something and it would land on Gita as if he was just, you know, throwing a foam ball at him. Like, it had no effect whatsoever. Gita just stayed with that rear low kick and he played with switch kick, switch kick, switch kick. Porterock started to, you know, see the effect. A big power low kick came in and then he did about five low kicks off of, you know, cross and then working the back leg, counter kick by working the back leg, and the next thing you know, David Porterack turned around, he was hurt, stumbled over in his corner, waved the towel, and Daniel Gita had won 1 minute into the round with low kicks. How else would he have done it? The only thing that was a surprise was that it wasn't the right low kicks that did it, you know, because that's what Daniel Gita kind of came up on. But as far as his endurance, his physical endurance to take damage and throw that low kick back, you're talking about one of the all-time greats. You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy can really play a counter-kick game, and he burst on the scene with a counter-kick victory over Thomas Ron. He'd been winning for a long time in Romania, and then he gets the opportunity, and it's showtime, beats Thomas Ron, and then he keeps moving around, and next thing you know, they put together that Japan tournament out of nowhere. We don't even know where they got the money for that because they were in bad shape at the time. And then I saw his name on that list, and I said, Gita's going to win this tournament easy, super easy. And he went out there and did so. Adrian Maxim gets a victory over Dmitry Sirbu. Adrian Maxim, he's had international opportunities for a long time. He's one of the better fighters to fight on the Romanian cards. It's just beating an elite name. That's all he needs. He needs to beat consistent elite names, or this is the kind of level that he will stay at. Eduardo Shalaru gets a victory over Laurenti Negru. Eduard, I need to see more from him. This is my, I'm getting used to him and seeing him on cards. Good victory for him here, but still nothing stand out about his skill set just yet. So need to see a little bit more. Someone who does have skill set that stands out to me is Cosmin Ionuscu. Ionuscu has got a really good game. He's so patient. He's got a really good low kick game. His boxing's all right. It's not great, but it's all right. But really, his ability to counter kick, his low kick whip is serious. And he's got some really good low kick stoppages. He gets a low kick stoppage here. And he also has a really good sneaky knee game. Like, good step knees. I'm all about Cosmin. He is a good fighter. There were other fighters on this card. I'll just run down the winners. Ionu Popa gets a victory. Ionut gets a victory. Nino Petvian gets a victory. Daniel Cobriano gets a victory. He actually got I think it was, I can't remember if it was a head kick or body kick, but I know he got a victory over Sergey Zanislev. And then we had Andrei Virdil gets a victory over Bogdan Surcu. Suru couldn't have all the Romanians win. Flavio Biaca, Biosiet gets a victory over Christian Stoica. And then Alexandru Martin gets a victory over Adrian Bakil. And I think that the big story of this card, outside of the prospect Cosmin, is the return of Daniel Gita, who then went on to, you know, make a few call-outs, you know, talk about Catalin Morsano, who wanted to fight him. It's just, there are some really good options for him now that he's back, because he's got a high-level name, which means that he can get paid a lot in this game, but we do want to see him go against the best. So hopefully, as they, you know, continue to work this out, we get to see him fight elite people. It can't just be He comes back and he goes against other old guys. We want to see him fight someone elite. Can he do it or not? We don't know, but I want to see it. I'm going to go back to Japan because the week before there was Crush 94. I won't talk about all the fights, but just some of the ones at the top. Ashihiro Kaneko gets a victory over Genyu. Wersakrukrek, as I mentioned before. If you ever hear me say that name, it's a long one. And I usually bring it up because it is the Fairtex Gym in Japan. So the Junya is a Thai-based fighter, Thailand-based fighter, but he's on Team Fairtex, and that is the name of their gym in Japan. Anyways, Kaneko gets a stoppage over him to win the bantamweight title. Victor Soravia, one of the better fighters in America who's been fighting out in Japan on a regular basis, he gets a extra round split decision over Soya Matsumoto. It's really good, Matsumoto, really, really good for Victor Soravia, who I first seen when he fought on Lion Fight, and then because of his weight class and his size, he was able to get some opportunities out there in Japan, and he's really been able to roll with it. So good for him. Keep working, keep fighting, and keep living your dream. And then maybe one day we'll see him over here in the States. Maybe we could slot him into one of the Floyd weight classes. Maybe even Crush comes over and does an event one time, but I like Victor Soravia. Good stuff there. I won't talk about all the results. Kimura Masasi gets a victory over Soto Aoa. KO in the first round, 136 into the first round. Naoki Yamamoto gets a victory over Utica by KO in the first round. Namito Izawa gets a victory over Tokihiro by knockout in the third round. So it's always cool to have a lot of stoppages on the card. And then there were other results throughout. But again, the level on these cards aren't always the highest. But there are people who you will hear their names down the road. So good stuff by Crush. They continue to move forward. Now I'm going to take you to Brazil. That's right. I wasn't joking. I'm taking you all over the world. We learned in this game. I'll probably wrap the show up with the Brazil card. Well, we go to WGP in Brazil. And good stuff throughout. Bruno Gazzani, one of the better fighters in the world. Definitely one of the better fighters for them. Gets victory over Robson Montitino. And that was unanimous decision. Bruno is the truth. We just got to get this guy. I would love to see him in glory one day. He is such a talent. They've got a lot of talented guys, but he's one of my favorites. Cesar Almeida gets a victory over Lucas Alcina. KO, that was cruiserweight division, so always paying attention to that. People who fight around 187 to 209 and in between, always pay attention to that. Diego Pio Vossan gets a victory over Hector Santiago. Man, I've talked about Diego a lot on this show. He fights in this card, like his parents run it, Good stuff for Diego. He gets a victory. Damian Salgovia gets a victory over Jonio Carvalho, and that was a split decision. There were other notables on the card, but I'm not going to go down the whole thing. The top of the card is where the bulk of the international talent or people who are ready to go against international talent is, so I'll usually just kind of wrap it up with that instead of giving you the whole breakdown. So that will be my show for the day. I think that the health of kickboxing can be shown and how much I just ran off to you guys and how many parts of the world. I did Lion Fight, and last time I did Infusion, but I did Lion Fight. Did I do Infusion? Hold on, I can't remember. I thought I talked about Infusion in the last card. I believe I did. I believe I was able to get that Infusion card in the last podcast, so please forgive me if I didn't, but I believe I did. I'm pretty certain I remember talking about Bojan Stojka and his victory. So, but I got Infusion on the last one. On this one, I wasn't able to get Infusion, but I got Lion Fight on this one. I got Crush. I got K1. I got Coliseum. I got Glory. Kickboxing is happening all over the world. So be out there. Be watching. Be supporting the sport. With the big news that just came up, I'm excited for everybody that pays attention to the sport. I'm excited for everybody that haven't heard of this guy or these athletes, and all of a sudden they're curious and they're sitting down and they are putting the time in to go see who Tenshin Nasukawa is, and maybe he introduces them to someone else, or maybe they watch a whole Risen card, or maybe they find one of the knockout cards. Kickboxing, we're doing good, so keep building on it, keep watching and supporting the athletes, and thank you all so much for listening to my podcast. God bless. I'll be back next week. I missed last week because I was busy with the Glory Fight Week. Man, I told myself I wasn't going to miss a week. But once all the cards came up, I said, you know what? Tis the time. I'll try to be consistent throughout the end of the year. Thanks, everyone. Peace.